On this Tuesday night, jailed for cheating. We're in the courtroom as an angry judge throws the book at educators convicted in one of the biggest cheating scandals in American history. Sentences of up to 20 years. Trapped in the sky, the video from on board as passengers hear an airport worker banging and screaming below them, stuck in the cargo hold. Fighting breast cancer, actress Rita Wilson says getting a second opinion may have saved her life. Tonight, the staggering number of patients who aren't getting second opinions, even though doctors strongly encourage it. And salary surprise, our cameras are there as employees learn they're getting a huge raise, some doubling their salaries. Tonight, how their boss is doing it. Nightly News begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News. Reporting tonight, Lester Holt.
Good evening. There's no harder lesson than the one taught today to eight Atlanta educators by an angry judge after they were convicted on charges typically reserved for mobsters. He threw the book at them, teachers, principals among them, handing down lengthy prison sentences for their roles in a massive cheating scandal in which standardized test scores at underperforming schools were inflated. The judge told them the conspiracy harmed thousands of children. Our chief education correspondent, Rahama Ellis, shows us how it all played out.
This thing was pervasive. It's like the sickest thing that's ever happened to this town.
In a tense courtroom, Judge Jerry Baxter imposed harsh sentences on eight former Atlanta public school educators convicted of racketeering, conspiring to fix standardized test scores to improve results.
There were thousands of children that were harmed in this thing. This is not a victimless crime.
Three disgraced educators, former teachers and administrators, were sentenced to 20 years, serving seven in prison, the rest on probation. The others, including a principal and elementary school teachers, were sentenced to 5 years, serving one to two of them behind bars. Emotions ran high.
How can you say that?
As the sentences came down.
You sit down, I'm going to put you in jail. If you yell at me, point at me.
It was painful for everyone, including the judge.
I consider you a wonderful educator, and that's what makes it so sad. You were under so much pressure.
Yes.
Yesterday, the judge heard from dozens of character witnesses pleading for leniency.
Have mercy on my daughter, please.
I'm giving you some opportunity.
And so Judge Baxter asked both sides to agree on a fair sentence that included admitting guilt. Otherwise, he would determine a punishment.
I've got the fair sentence in my mind, and it involves going to jail.
All right.
Back in court today, only two decided to take the plea, which included home confinement or weekends behind bars. The judge admonished the rest.
All I want from any of these people is just to take some responsibility. But they refuse. They refuse.
And today's sentencing also included community service and thousands of dollars in fines. While some criticized its severity, others said this cheating scandal shortchanged some of the city's most vulnerable children who are now years behind in their education. Lester?
Quite a scene in that courtroom. Rahama, thanks very much. Tonight, we're learning a lot more about a mid-air emergency that was just breaking as we came on the air here last night. A baggage handler who became trapped in the cargo hold of a plane during flight. Passengers hearing banging and screams for help coming from beneath them. Imagine that. Here's our national correspondent, Miguel Almaguer, on how this happened and the questions it's raised.
Alaska Airlines Flight 448 departing Seattle was bound for Los Angeles. Passengers and crew heard the desperate call coming from the cargo hold. A steady knock for help, a panicked voice just beneath their feet.
And he was like, help, help. He was like, what?
Climbing to some 5,000 feet, the sounds came from a pressurized and temperature-controlled space near the front of the plane, where pets are often kept. The pilot declares an emergency landing.
There'll be a person in there, so we're going to come back around.
Airborne for 14 minutes, a contracted employee came off the 737 in good condition.
And Menzies Aviation employee walked off the aircraft and told first responders that he was taking a nap in the cargo hold of the aircraft.
Alaska says the unidentified employee has a security badge, passed a background check, and a drug test after the incident. Our policies and procedures were knowingly violated by an experienced employee who hid in the hold of an aircraft to take a nap. Aviation expert Jeff Price.
The irony in this situation is the gentleman who fell asleep is part of that ground crew who is supposed to ensure that there's no unauthorized personnel or items in the cargo hold or in and around the aircraft.
And it's happened before. 6 years ago, an airport employee fell asleep in the baggage compartment on a JetBlue flight from New York to Boston. Tonight, the FAA and Alaska Airlines are investigating.
Tonight, airport employees tell us the official who fell asleep on the plane was working with a crew of three others who noticed he was missing and tried to find him. But 9.5 hours into his shift, they figured he had gone home for the day. Lester.
All right, Miguel Almaguer, thank you. In Oklahoma tonight, a reserve deputy is free on bond after turning himself in for the deadly shooting of a fleeing unarmed suspect, though he says he never meant to kill the man. NBC's Kevin Tibbles has more on that.
Today, 73-year-old Bob Bates, the part-time Tulsa deputy sheriff, was formally charged with second-degree manslaughter.
How do you feel about the charges?
I feel that they're unwarranted and shouldn't have been brought.
Bates was acting as backup when the suspect in an undercover sting operation bolted. 44-year-old Eric Harris was selling an illegal gun. A scuffle ensued, picked up by police body cam. Bates pulled what he says he thought was his taser, but instead fired his gun. Harris later died. Bates claims in the heat of the moment he mistook his pistol for his taser. There are more than 100 reserve deputies with the Tulsa Sheriff's Office. Nationwide, that number is about 50,000. In many jurisdictions, reservists make financial contributions to the department. Bates has contributed thousands.
The point is that if you have enough money, you get to go play cop.
The Sheriff's Office says Bates had once been a police officer and has had more than 400 hours of training as a reservist, logging 3,000 hours of service.
He was not playing anything. He was there like the other officers, doing their job. That he's play acting? No, he was there to help.
The Reserve Officers Association says some 200 volunteers have lost their lives in the line of duty. Bob Bates was named Oklahoma Deputy of the Year in 2011. He has now been released on $25,000 bail. Kevin Tibbles, NBC News, Tulsa.
Now to another case we've been following. The friend who was in the car with Walter Scott minutes before a South Carolina police officer fatally gunned Scott down is speaking out. Pierre Fulton was identified Monday as the man in Scott's passenger seat. Fulton released a statement saying he doesn't know why Scott decided to run off during a traffic stop, but says, quote, he didn't deserve to die. A developing story tonight in Salt Lake City where an incredibly powerful dust storm turned deadly, blinding drivers and packing winds so high they toppled several tractor trailers on the highway. NBC's Hallie Jackson reports.
This is what it looked like during a deadly dust storm that killed at least one person and hurt 25 others. Zero visibility, with wind gusts up to 70 miles an hour, whipping up dust so thick, state police say a semi-truck had to stop on the highway. That triggered a chain reaction. As many as 8 big rigs, about a dozen cars, part of the pileup.
This dust that you see, it was completely blown over with dust. Zero visibility.
At least 16 people have been hospitalized, with Interstate 80 closed for nearly 100 miles in both directions, from the Nevada border all the way to Salt Lake City, now bracing for a blow. The airport shutting down temporarily as the dust storm works its way east. Hallie Jackson, NBC News, Los Angeles.
We are witnessing tonight another historic step in thawing relations between the U.S. and Cuba. The White House announcing that President Obama will remove Cuba from the list of state sponsors of terrorism. Senior White House correspondent Chris Jansing joins us tonight from the White House with more on this. Chris?
Good evening, Lester. Another remnant of the Cold War fell away this afternoon. Cuba has been on that list of state sponsors of terror since 1982, and today's decision to remove them gives substance to the symbolism of the weekend's historic handshake between President Obama and Raul Castro. It paves the way for the opening of embassies and could mean some significant new economic opportunities for both countries. In his message to Congress today, President Obama said Cuba, quote, has not provided any support for international terrorism over the last 6 months and has provided assurances that it will not support acts of international terrorism in the future. Now, the move does have vocal opponents, including just-announced presidential candidate Marco Rubio, who tonight says it's a terrible decision. Congress now has 45 days to review Cuba's removal from the list, but it is unlikely to block it. Lester?
Chris Jansing tonight at the White House. Thanks. On the campaign trail, Hillary Clinton made her very first public appearance today since announcing she is running for president. It's been a low-key kickoff compared to her last run, yet the media frenzy is in full effect all the same. NBC's Andrea Mitchell is on the trail for us.
After 2 days of occasional sightings on the road to Iowa, when Hillary Clinton finally arrived for her first public event, it set off a stampede of photographers and reporters.
The guy in the orange pants is pretty quick.
How does it feel to be back in Iowa?
It feels great.
She had stopped at a coffee shop for chai tea and conversation in LeClaire, where Kristen Welker found her.
How do you win this time? What's your strategy?
I'm having a great time. Can't look forward to any more than I am. Thank you.
Disappointing Clinton Sullivan, who'd driven from Illinois to see her.
And she comes out the back door and gets in the van and takes off. So it's pretty disappointing.
But for the first time today, Clinton started laying out why she is running at a community college where high school students can take college classes.
But I get dual credit, so I'll get high school English credit and I'll also get college credit too.
So you will have 48 college credits when you graduate from high school.
Yeah.
These days, Clinton is sounding more like a populist than the New York senator who used to represent Wall Street.
And there's something wrong when hedge fund managers pay lower tax rates than nurses or the truckers that I saw on I-80 as I was driving here over the last 2 days.
Mrs. Clinton, what did you learn today? What did you take away from all of this?
So much good information, so much great exchange about what works, what can work, not just here in Iowa, but I think across the country.
And while her aides have been corralling donors all week, today Clinton proposed a constitutional amendment to limit campaign spending.
We're going to raise a ton of money.
We're going to need a lot of money. She's never one. She's a tough fighter. She's never one who's going to unilaterally disarm.
As Clinton is asking voters to give her another chance, aides say that they will give detailed policy proposals in the coming weeks. But it's clear they would like this campaign to be all about the economy. Lester.
All right. Andrea, thank you. Tonight marks exactly 1 year since Boko Haram militants kidnapped nearly 300 schoolgirls in Nigeria, igniting the Bring Back Our Girls campaign that lit up social media. That campaign has faded, even though the vast majority of those girls have not been seen again. Our report tonight from NBC's Stephanie Gusk.
In Nigeria today, students carried the names of the 219 kidnapped schoolgirls still missing.
Bring back our girls, now and alive!
A year after Boko Haram militants seized them from their boarding school at gunpoint. Grace is one of the lucky few who escaped. The 18-year-old, who did not want to be on camera, says she ran from her captors, hiding in a nearby village. She's in Oregon now at a private school on scholarship. Last year, reaction to the kidnappings was quick and global. The Bring Back Our Girls campaign went viral, spearheaded by some big names. But millions of tweets then have become just thousands now, while Boko Haram continues to attack, kidnap, and kill.
Just last week, I spoke with someone whose town had been raided by Boko Haram. They rounded up all the young men and executed 27 of them.
Fighting Boko Haram is tough. Nigerian forces have failed to stop them.
These special forces have been undergoing intense training.
Last May, we joined Cameroon's special forces on the Nigeria border. In December, Boko Haram attacked this same unit. 7 of these soldiers were killed. On this anniversary of the kidnappings, campaigners are hoping to raise awareness again. Nigeria's new president today vowed to continue the fight against Boko Haram, but admitted he couldn't promise that the missing schoolgirls would ever be found. Stephanie Gosk, NBC News, New York.
There is a lot more news still ahead tonight. The announcement from actress Rita Wilson revealing she has breast cancer, found after getting a second opinion, something so many patients aren't doing. Also, our cameras are rolling as a CEO tells his employees they're getting huge pay raises, some of them getting double the salary. It's quite a moment. Wait till you hear how he's doing it. We are back with the announcement today from actress Rita Wilson revealing that she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and last week she underwent a double mastectomy. She says the cancer was found after she got a second opinion, something doctors strongly recommend, but a lot of people don't do. Here's NBC's Ann Thompson.
Rita Wilson is an actress, a singer.
I've been crying.
The wife of Tom Hanks, and now a breast cancer survivor. Telling People magazine today she expects to make a full recovery after a double mastectomy. Because I caught this early, have excellent doctors, and because I got a second opinion. That opinion may have saved her life. For years, Wilson was monitored for conditions that put her at a higher risk for breast cancer. Two recent biopsies showed no cancer. But a friend who had breast cancer urged Wilson to get a second opinion on the pathology. My gut told me that was the thing to do, says Wilson. This time, the diagnosis was cancer, confirmed by yet another doctor. You have nothing to lose if both opinions match up for the good, and everything to gain if something that was missed is found, which does happen. A University of Michigan study showed more than half of patients who sought a second opinion from a group of cancer specialists had their treatment plans changed.
When you get that diagnosis of breast cancer, do you have to move so fast you don't have time for a second opinion?
No. You have time, you have several weeks, in fact, to plan the most appropriate course of therapy. There's no immediate need to have treatment that day, that week.
Though insurance covers second opinions, a 2010 Gallup poll found 70% of Americans were so confident in their doctor's advice, they didn't feel the need to get a second opinion or do their own research. Rita Wilson trusted her instincts, and tonight is thankful she did. Ann Thompson, NBC News, New York.
We're back in a moment with a famous mountain lion found under a family's house in an urban jungle and the race to track him around town. In Cape Canaveral today, SpaceX launched a ship with supplies for the International Space Station, but once again, they couldn't retrieve the reusable rocket that sent the mission into orbit. This is what happened in January, the last time SpaceX tried to land its unmanned rocket on a drone ship. Today's attempt was a bit closer, but no cigar. Quite the unwanted house guest in Los Angeles when a mountain lion made a temporary den in the crawl space under a home. Wildlife officials tried everything from shooting beanbags at him to tickling him with a stick, but it appears the big cat left on his own. He's tagged, so we do know he's the same cat made famous by that National Geographic photo. When we come back, why these workers are so happy, some of them just doubled their salaries overnight. Hopefully your boss is watching our final story tonight, because while the average CEO in this country makes almost 300 times as much as the average worker, one boss just changed the lives of his employees with fat raises right out of his own pocket. Our Joe Fryer was there when they got the good news.
The business plan at Gravity Payments has never been conventional.
Do you need anything from me?
CEO Dan Price started the company, which processes credit card payments, in 2004 when he was 19.
If someone asked you how old you were, what did you say?
I told them I'm 12, and they would laugh, and they thought it was funny, and it kind of, like, avoided the question.
His success is nothing to laugh at. In January, Price graced the cover of Entrepreneur magazine. Yet something has been bothering him, the income gap.
It's a big struggle for the middle class, and I think part of that is things are getting more expensive, and the wage growth just isn't keeping up.
Price's lowest paid workers earn shy of $40,000 a year.
It is tough because Seattle is a very expensive city, especially with the rate it's been growing.
So at a staff meeting, Price decided to merge his money with his mouth.
We're going to have a minimum $70,000 pay rate for everyone that works here.
No one saw it coming before long. Shock turned into gratitude. About 70 employees will get big raises. Some will double their salaries.
I can move out of my mom's house.
With this news today, we're going to be able to have and start a family, you know, months before we initially thought we could.
And single mother Alyssa O'Neill can now buy a house.
It just means stability, confidence. It's life-changing.
To help pay for it, Price is dropping his salary from about $1 million to $70,000.
I would like to have this spark a conversation and basically have people start to think about a different way of doing business.
The income gap might feel bigger than the Grand Canyon, but inside one company, it just got a lot smaller.
Thank you.
Joe Fryer, NBC News, Seattle.
Now that is a good day at the office. That's going to do it for us on this Tuesday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.